You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson. Sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Good morning. This is Get Radio and welcome to the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment. Now, every week I introduce you to trusted experts here across Oxfordshire who tend to share their knowledge of business. They tend to share their knowledge of what's really happening on the ground and really give you food for thought as the listener that you may be able to implement in your own lives and indeed businesses. And today is going to be no different. I'm joined by a good friend of mine, James Butler, who has no job and is retired. I made James's joke for him. Sorry, James. But James is going to share with you some really good tips around how he retired, about having a plan B. And I'm sure there's going to be lots of travel stories along the way. This is the Business Brunch. After the song, we'll introduce you to James. Get ready. Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Today, I'm really, really delighted to be joined by a friend of mine and a friend of many across Oxfordshire, James Butler, who will be sharing with you, the listener, lots all around the world of retirement, about having a plan B. And knowing James, will be giving lots of practical advice or certainly things to consider. So let's start by introducing James. Welcome, James.
Hi, Ben. How are you doing?
Yeah, so well. Thanks so much for joining us. So can we just start by, for those who don't know you, let's start by introducing you to the listener. So tell them all about James Butler.
I guess the most interesting things are I lived in South Oxfordshire for 20 years. I was a business coach and I operated around the Oxford area, knew lots of people in the business community of Oxford and Oxfordshire. And I had a life plan to stop work and go traveling, which I succeeded on starting in 2020. So for the last 3 years, I've not been working and I'm no longer part of the business community of South Oxfordshire, but obviously still in touch with a lot of people who are still in it, including you.
Amazing. Perfect. We look forward to learning more about your story over the next hour. But I guess before that, one way always to get to know a business person is by the non-business part, which is a song choice. So you have kindly chosen a song for the listeners this morning, and I'll give you lots of notice and time to think about it. So what is your song choice and why did you pick it?
So the song I've chosen is a song that I love, which is called You're Still the One by Shania Twain. And anyone who knows the song or listens to it in a second, it's about a love song about coming through struggle. And my wife and I, who we've been married almost 30 years, but we had our ups and downs at the beginning, so it's always resonated with me.
Discussing topics that impact local businesses and their owners, this is the Business Brunch, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Before that great song dedicated to James's wife, who is definitely the one, we have been speaking to James about introducing him to you, the listener. But what we're really keen to do now is to really share James's story, because I think that in the world of networking, we meet so many people. And I think James's story has really stuck with a lot of us as a friendship, but also in terms of his planning and spreadsheets, which we'll come on to in a moment. But let's just start by, I guess, giving a bit of background, if that's okay, James. With quite a big question, quite a broad question, but how did you plan for retirement? What was the point that you started planning for retirement? What was that journey?
Well, arguably, I started planning with my first ever job as a graduate. So my wife, Bev, is a few years older than me. And when I first did my first job, I was offered a pension and a company pension. And we had to make the decision about whether or not I was going to pay into a pension that I wouldn't be able to draw on when I was 65, but Bev would be 70, 72 at the time. And it was just seemed daft to have something that I couldn't touch when she would already be retired. She's a teacher, was a teacher then, sorry. And so her retirement age would have been 60. And so we'd have had 10 years where she would have been retired and I would have been able to touch my pension. So I chose not to have a company pension at the age of 22. And so I guess it started then. It crystallized a few years later, probably about 5 or 6 years later. And that's when we really came up with a firm date, which was around Bev's 55th birthday. And that's what we then kind of worked towards. And at the time, not being able to foresee that a week after her 55th birthday, we'd have a global pandemic and the country would be on lockdown. But we'll probably come out and cover that when we talk about plan Bs.
I must say that was very bad planning all of those years ago, not planning for the pandemic 30 years later. But maybe we will talk about that shortly. So just in terms of, I think one of the things that's always resonated, and you've kindly spoken on this radio show before about it, and networking events for Mike and I, is your spreadsheet and I guess kind of the mechanics behind it. So can you just, I guess, without being visual, more verbal, kind of talk those listening at home about what is the spreadsheet? How did it become a spreadsheet? And really kind of how did you build that plan over a period of time?
I mean, I think the first thing to say is that spreadsheets work for me, and I appreciate they don't work for everyone. So it doesn't have to be a spreadsheet. But I think the fundamental principle that we use to plan our retirement, but I then used when working with business clients for 20 years, was always begin with the end in mind, have an idea of what it is that you want to achieve, and ideally have an end date, something specific to aim towards, and then just work backwards and say, well, if I want that to be true, so in my case, it was 2020, if I want X to be true in 2020, what needs to happen in the intervening period? So it meant that almost from the beginning, which would have been in the mid-90s, so it was about a 25-year project, but it was literally saying, well, you know, if we want to get to have enough money in order to retire, what are the milestones on the way in terms of owning our own home, you know, paying off the mortgage, building a pension pot, what other things that might be feeding into that. So therefore the spreadsheet was a plan that just said, this is going to be true in 2020, this needs to be true in 2015, this needs to be true in 2010, and in order to get to those places we need to do this and this. And both Bev and I are very linear thinking people, so that suited us. We're not big dreamers, sort of artistic people, we're very linear people, so that suited us to be able to say, right, you know, this is where we are on that linear path. And there were deviations from the path because life events happen. Like, you know, I think I worked through two or three recessions. There all sorts of things can happen. We both changed careers within that period. Things can happen which are deviations, but you come back to that. This is where we're heading. And then obviously as it got closer and closer, it became much more detailed of actually almost day by day, month by month, that needs to happen. To me, Microsoft Excel is one of the greatest gifts to the world, and its versatility for me allows you to do a great deal of things, not with clever formulas, just by collating stuff in one place. And I still use it. I'm retired. I've been worked for 3 years, but I still use it literally every day to plan and to track what I'm doing and whether I'm doing all the things I want to do now in my life. As well as often using it to get to the point where I retired. Because the retirement point is only a milestone on the way, it turns out. Life carries on when you retire, so it doesn't just stop.
No, absolutely. And I'm really, really keen to actually build on that point later in the show in terms of since retirement and after retirement, because I think that's a really, really key point. Just continuing on the planning for retirement. I think it's been very, very widely reported that so many of us or so many people don't have a pension. And I think that one of the things that I see very, very common in networking circles and talking to business people, because I'm interested, is that actually so many business owners' strategy is actually I sell the business. My plan is my business is my way out. I guess putting your kind of business coach hat on and looking at your kind of professional work, what do you see as, I guess, how percentage of business owners who could sell, and do you need to have a plan B? Like what would be your advice to people who potentially have that strategy in terms of their pension is going to be selling their business.
I think it's one of the things in particularly in the small business community, or particularly in the small business community, is this kind of myth that if you work for yourself, that you have a business. So I worked for myself for years, but I didn't really have a business to sell. I didn't have any kind of sale exit value for my business because it was about me. So I think if you're a business where it's about you, that's a lot harder to sell to someone else because obviously you won't be in it. If you're a business that's got 50 employees and you're directing it, but effectively it functions day to day without you, then that's something that could have value to someone else. And I think, again, as a business coach, I would have been sat alongside someone asking them those questions about what is it that you're building? Where's the value in what you're building? Because if it's in you as a person, then it has quite limited sales potential. Whereas if it's a list of customers or a set of contracts or some IP or whatever it might be, intellectual property, then that can have value. But again, so, and the other thing is that most business owners that I worked with had a felt that their business was worth much more than it was in reality. So I think you can, particularly in small business, you hear about people selling businesses for millions or billions, and you assume that will be the case. And at the small business end of the market, it's not often, or it's not as often, that it's kind of retirement money. It's nice holiday, nice kitchen, new car money, pay off the mortgage money, but it's not always retirement money. So if you want to build a pot that's going to retire, again, if that's your strategy, then you need to make that the strategy for your business. And so as a coach, I would have been saying, okay, if in 10 years' time you want to sell your business for £1 million, how big does it need to be worth £1 million? Mm-hmm. Who is the likely person who's going to buy it? And you need to be working towards that for years in advance in order to make sure that you achieve the goal. And clients did do that in all sorts of businesses. But then I believe you need to have that kind of flag in the sand that says, right, and I picked the number £1 million out of the air, but if I want it to be worth £1 million, it probably needs to have a turnover of this and a profit of that, and it needs to have this kind of profile within the industry, whichever industry you're in order to be able to achieve that number, if that's the number that you're chasing. And if you're chasing £10 million, you need to do something completely different, because a business that's worth £10 million is very, very different to a business that's worth £1 million. It's not just 10 times bigger. So.
Without doubt. One of the things I hear you regularly say is that your journey was your way, but it's not necessarily right for everyone, which I think is very, very true advice. But I think one of the things that is true for everybody is that we will all get old, and most of us would hope that we would retire. And I think that one of the things that is very, very widely reported, it's fact that most people retire with less money than they have when they work, and most people retire with more time than they have when they retire. So I'm just quite keen to gauge your personal thoughts on that. I guess that ratio really is, when you retire, typically would you need less money or would you need more money? Without stating the obvious, and I guess, How can one, or I guess what would be the things that one could consider when thinking about how much money that they would need in retirement? Because I think it's very easy to say, as you've touched on there, is I need £1 million to retire. I need to sell my business for £1 million. Like, what are the things that you could consider to, I guess, identify how much you need if that is more than a state pension would potentially give you?
So, I mean, I think the starting point is actually to start out. I'm amazed at how many people have no idea what they're spending now. So that's not how I would work, but it is how a lot of other people work, where they'd rather, the kind of cliches of putting the credit card bills in the drawer unopened and all those kind of things. Mm-hmm. I met many, many people, particularly if they've got a reasonable income coming in and therefore they can get away with it. They have no idea of what they're, cost of living is when they're working. So therefore, in my view, they can have no real way of predicting what it would be when they're not working. So a starting point would be to analyze what it is one is spending money on currently. And then obviously there's a question of then evaluating what might change. So we've done a lot of travel. A lot more travel than we did when we were working, because obviously we now have 52 weeks holiday a year. So we had to plan for the fact that, so our spending in our retirement is kind of bubble loaded at the front end because we've got these significant expenditures on international travel and things. So that for us was an extra. But then there are loads of other things that we're not spending money on. So I would imagine most people would spend much less on entertainment, much less on clothing and all those kind of things. Obviously, if for a lot of people, they will not be commuting. They might not need as many cars in the household. There are various things that might become cheaper when you're not working that can be factored in. And some people will live in a smaller property. Obviously, we've gone from a three-bedroom semi to a caravan, a motorhome. So we've gone from quite big to very, very small. So we've reduced our housing costs enormously. Other people a lot of people retire and they move from, you know, a lot of people in Oxfordshire might move to less expensive parts of the country and therefore take some value out of their property when they do that. So there are so many different factors. It depends on those individual choices. So the short answer to your question is it depends, but the long answer is get a hold of what you're spending money on now and then think about how you might spend that differently when you're heading towards or in retirement.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And is there a good rule of thumb in terms of if you want to have this amount a year, you need to have this amount as a lump sum invested or whatever. I appreciate. I know that you read and study a lot. And there's different theories that depend on kind of who you read. But what would be your advice under that area?
So within the sort of widespread media around retiring early, the general rule of thumb is that you need to plan for four times your spending. So if you're, it's called the 4% rule. Sorry, not four times, 25 times, it's called the 4% rule, beg your pardon. So if you were to spend £40,000 a year in retirement, then you need £1 million. That's the kind of easy sums. Obviously, if you only spend £20,000 a year, you only need £500,000. And so that was part of the goal setting that we did was knowing, because Bev and I are very mathematical and very analytical, we knew what we were spending. Bev's very, very good at managing money. So we had a budget even when we were working, and we could give some element of prediction to what we might need. But obviously then that's a rule of thumb, and there are various things depending on how you're investing it and who you're investing it with. You might need a bigger lump sum, and depending on how you're accessing the money, you might need a bigger lump sum. If you want greater insurance against risk, because no one foresaw the pandemic, we didn't necessarily see an invasion of Ukraine coming. There are all these things which caused a bulk in inflation. There are all these things that, you know, even in our very recent history, in the 3 years since I retired, things have happened that no one saw coming. And I guess the thing is that we can't see specifically what is coming, but we do know that something's going to come. That's going to, you know, that's the kind of, so if you look back through the last 30, 40, 50, 100 years, there's always been something that's come along that's kind of disrupted the pattern. That's the nature of human history. We just can't specify in advance what it's going to be. So again, you might be more conservative on your withdrawal rate and therefore have a bigger lump sum in comparison. And like anybody who ever meets with a financial advisor, or planner, they're one of the early questions in the process should be, what's your attitude to risk? And so that would then dictate how big a lump sum. And obviously, we can go into the whole financial industry thing, but also if you're paying a financial advisor a percentage every year to manage your money, then you need to factor that into how big your pot's going to be. So...
really good advice. Really good advice. James, thank you so much for sharing such insight already. We'll continue the conversation after this.
Oxfordshire Station, get radio.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Hope you enjoyed that song. Equally, I hope you've enjoyed the conversation so far with James Butler, who has kindly, while still retired, has donated his time to me and indeed you, the listener, to just share his story and share insight and expertise and knowledge with you listening at home. I hope you've got your notepads. Just before the break, James, we've been talking about attitude to risk. We've been talking about sort of potential sums that you might need. One of the things that you touched on is that we couldn't have foreseen a pandemic. We couldn't have foreseen what's happened in Ukraine or all of these horrible things. Before focusing on that, I just want to go back one step, because one of the things you mentioned quite early on in this show was around, yourself and Bev have changed careers. You touched on that there have been recessions. How do you mitigate those things happening? And how did you, I guess, stay on the plan to retire for that certain date? What was part of your budgetary plans at the start? Do you know what? I think that there will be three recessions, or what I think I might change career. Or was it just that actually you set a number that is higher than you need? Like how did that work? Or was it just lucky?
Well, I mean, it definitely was lucky. I'm conscious I'm sat here as a white, able-bodied male. So we had no impacts on earning from... So Bev and I didn't have kids, so we didn't suffer the fact that the wage gap that many women suffer with her, because she didn't stop to have children. Neither of us had, so there were some illnesses, but we had nothing that was kind of earnings limiting in the long term or anything like that. All of those things, we had definitely had an element of luck. We were lucky enough to have professional jobs, so we earned well. We didn't earn ridiculously well, but we earned above the average, which I think contributes. So I'm very conscious that there's a huge amount of good fortune that has afforded us the chance to do this. In terms of how can you plan it, I guess when you're a long way from it, so as I say, it was a 25-year process. So in the early years, there's no real fixed idea of where we need to be. If we're going to get there, it's not a linear model because of compounding. So we always had the mantra of saving and investing the most that we could. So because we had this kind of budgetary model, one of the things that we tried to do in life, and I tried to help businesses do in business, is the way to be successful is to spend less than you earn and then invest the rest. So in a business sense, that's if you spend less than you earn, that means you're profitable and you can then choose to reinvest that, or you can take that profit out for the shareholders. In life terms, that means you have that profit, that extra gap to invest and therefore start the compound machine, the nest egg that's going to build up towards your big number, whatever that might be. Because if the number's a million, almost no one is going to do that by putting £1 million into the bank. Most people are going to do that by putting significantly less into investments, which then compound and grow over the period of time. And so the thing is always to start as early as possible, because then that gives the compounding machine as long as possible. But if you're spending less than you earn, and we kept our spending at a relatively straight level, even though our salaries fluctuated. So as you say, career changes, we might have had some setbacks, or, I was running a business coaching business through the financial crash. And so therefore, I think I lost in three consecutive years, I lost a client each year, which was 20% of my business. So I had these knocks in my business, which I had to then regrow it to get back to the same place, knocked the business, regrow it to get back to the same place. And that has an impact on earnings. And so therefore we were able to fluctuate, and in the good years lay down more, and in the bad years we had to put down less, but we always kept our spending well less than our earnings. So there was always something going into building our net worth, whether that be paying off the mortgage or be investing or a combination of two.
Really interesting. Really, really interesting. And I think what I'm about to ask you is going to be a very, very difficult question. So I apologize. I introduced you as a friend at the start of the show, James, and hopefully you still will be at the end. But how should one consider how much they spend. So I think that different people have different drivers, don't they? Whether that be early retirement or whether that be a nice holiday or a nice car or a nice house or giving lots to charity or whatever. But I think that the point that you make is really, 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 really important. I think a lot of us underestimate this in terms of you should spend less than you earn and you should invest the rest. But actually, what are the things that we should consider in terms of ensuring that ratio remains to be true?
So again, I'm very conscious of not annoying the listener by kind of appearing insensitive. So I'm conscious that, you know, you get the thing nowadays where people say, well, if you want to buy a house, give up your avocado breakfast and Netflix. And it's not as simple as just saying I'm going to save a few pounds a week by avoiding certain expenditure. But there are some big ticket items where the economy, I think, and society is kind of just geared towards consumerism, because that's what kind of drives the profitability of businesses. And so therefore, if you're able to disconnect from that in some way and therefore understand what it is that you really value in life rather than what a marketing message is telling you you value in life, then you're more able to control that kind of discretionary spend. So everybody needs a roof over their head. Everybody needs food on the table and clothes on their back and to look after their families and their kids and things. And I appreciate it, particularly at the moment, there may be people for whom that is all a struggle. And for me in my life, that was a struggle. I came from a position where that was a struggle. So I'm very conscious that there are people for whom that is a challenge. Once you're past those kind of hygiene factors of just, you know, surviving, if you like, it's then thinking about, well, so, I mean, I know someone who is in their mid-20s and complains they've got no money because they're on a lowish paid job, but they have a brand new Audi SUV. Now, that's important to them. That's their choice. But that obviously comes at a monthly rental payment or whatever. So the value of their brand new car is probably more than the sum of all the cars I've ever owned, because I'm not motivated by cars. It doesn't float my boat. So that doesn't make me right and them wrong. It's just that's a question of choice. And because I wasn't spending money on things like cars, or, you know, we got to a house that we liked and we didn't feel the need to buy a bigger house and a bigger house and a bigger house, or I didn't have expensive hobbies. I've got friends who've got push bikes that cost more than any car I've ever bought. So again, that brings them pleasure. That's their choice. But Bev and I never lived like monks. We like nice food and nice drink, so we would buy nice food and nice drink. Both of us are very into travel, Bev particularly. So all the way through, we still had long-haul international holidays in fantastic places. And we decided that we weren't going to live like a monk and kind of survive on lentils for 5 years in order that we could retire that 1 year earlier or 2 years earlier. We were going to enjoy the journey, because the whole point, I mean, I retired at 48, and part of that driver was you just never know what's around the corner. The things I wanted to do after I stopped work rely on me being young, fit and healthy, because they're travel, they're active, relatively active, and you just never know what's around the corner. And so therefore, that was a reason for retiring early, but it's also a reason for enjoying the journey on the way, because you may not make that 55th birthday, you just never know. So I wanted to make sure that we'd done other things that had enabled us to enjoy life on the way. I mean, there's this movement for people who retire early, which I know you're aware of, called FIRE, financial independence and retire early. And there are some people within that space who are zealots about avoiding expenditure. So they will sofa surf on friends' sofas or house sit and things in order to lower housing costs. They will almost literally raid skips to get food because they don't want to pay full price for food and all that kind of stuff. Or they'll walk or cycle everywhere rather than owning any form of car. We weren't that extreme. I don't think you have to be that extreme. But then we retired at 50, and some people will retire at 35. So it's, again, it does depend on the individual choice.
No, absolutely. Really, really fascinating. Really, really fascinating. I'm going to go full circle, if that's okay, James. And I'm going to bring it back to, I guess, kind of the world of business, because I think that a lot of people that you and I know across Oxfordshire run businesses or work for business or have the ambition to run businesses. And I think that for a lot of us, what will drive our retirement or what will drive our lifestyle or wealth will be our business. When working with your clients across the Oxfordshire and beyond, I always find it quite fascinating to ask this question. Did you see particular traits in businesses or people that you got to know that actually led to a successful business or a happy business? And were there things that you saw that actually, in hindsight, if they knew that, they may have retired earlier or they may have they may have avoided that mistake? What would be, I guess, kind of your take on that muddled question?
I don't think it was muddled. And I think that two things spring to mind immediately. I think that as a society, we don't admire enough people who do run their own businesses. And whether that be a business that they own or a business that they manage on some behalf of someone else. But the drive that's needed to run your own business, to get up every day, to take the roll the punches, take the knocks, get back up and push forward for those successes. That's what I've always admired about almost anyone I've met in the small business community of Oxfordshire and beyond, which is that, and I don't think they realise how different that is always compared to having a normal job where you get up and someone tells you what to do and you go and do it. And so if you do have to have some kind of drive, because it's almost unheard of to not have not setbacks or knocks on the way and things to overcome. So you have to have that kind of push to keep whatever that is, whether that be earning some money or creating a product or solving a problem for someone, whatever it is that's your driver, that getting up every day and making that happen takes a huge amount of mental fortitude. And so I've always admired people who do it, including yourselves and myself and lots of our mutual friends. And I think because you're in that environment, everybody you see is doing the same thing, you forget that that's actually quite unusual. And I think, so definitely the people need drive. And then I think the thing to avoid is drift. So I think when you run your own business, most of the time, you are the jack of all trades, everything stops on your desk. And so therefore you can be caught in the small minutiae of doing the invoicing or getting the computer fixed or, you know, getting your internet connection sorted with BT or whatever it will be, all these kind of minutiae stuff that you don't have when you work for Oxford University Press or someone like that, then what happens then is the real purpose of the business and the real driving it forward and making stuff happen and moving towards that target of growing a business, it's always easy to get put off. And so therefore you find that you know, as a business coach, you'd have regular sessions with people and you'd leave a session where someone had said, I'm going to do A, B, C, D, and E. And you'd meet them at the next meeting and they might have done A and B, but they haven't done C, D, and E because life intervened. And part of the value of having a coach was that there's some accountability there. And so people would do more of the C, D, and E than they might otherwise have done because they didn't want to turn up and not done it. So I think that's the enemy is the drift, which is that people just wake up and suddenly 2-3 years have gone and they haven't necessarily advanced as far as they might have wanted to. And that's why, I mean, I have nothing to sell now because I'm retired, but that's why I'm a huge advocate for people having, you know, mastermind groups, entrepreneur circles, mentors, coaches, whatever it will be, some kind of external accountability. Because again, I worked in corporate life for almost 10 years and I always had a boss. And so therefore, although I had a lot of autonomy, there was always someone I had to justify what I'd done, whether it be that day, that week, that month, that quarter. And when you work for yourself, that goes. And so therefore, it's just really easy to just drift. And that's why I'm a great fan of the plan, which is to say, well, if I intended to do this in 2023, well, here we are, we've got, what, 50, 60 days left. What do I need to do in order to get closer to achieving that than I might otherwise do?
Absolutely. No, really, really good. Really, really good points. And James, really, really keen to build on that more. Let's continue the conversation after this.
The Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Today, I'm really delighted to be joined by a good friend of mine, but also many across Oxfordshire, James Butler, who I quite enjoy the joke that James makes, and he's not actually made it on this show yet, who does nothing. But anyway, let's continue with me heckling James in terms of what you were just touching on there, in terms of if you were to work for a corporate, you would have a boss ahead of you. But actually within a small business, often you don't have that accountability or that support network. So I think that it would be a really good time to just build on that point in terms of the process of working with a coach or a mastermind group, or like you were touching on in terms of different mentors or whatever. It would just be really interesting to sort of share your experiences of that and the things that potentially the listeners should consider if exploring this.
Yeah, I mean, I think going back a stage, I think one of the things is, you know, as someone who was networking in Oxfordshire, looking for work and looking for support infrastructure around me for the best part of 20 years, when you turn up at an event and you stand up and you say, you know, my name's James Butler, and now I'd say I do nothing, it's not necessarily a good idea to be overly vulnerable in those situations, because you're trying to look like you know what you're doing, and look like you're successful, look like you can be an attractive person to work with or to refer. So although you build up a network of supportive people around you, they're not always people that you would feel able to air your dirty laundry in front of, and it may not be wise from a business point of view to do so. Mm-hmm. And so I think you need something else, which is outside of that network of supportive people, but which is where you can be vulnerable and you can say, actually, at the moment, I'm not having a good month, or I'm struggling with this employee, or this supplier's given me the runaround, whatever it might be, or how do I deal with this difficult client? And those are the kind of things that I had conversations with day in, day out with clients as a coach. And I also had, I mean, I attended a mastermind group that I founded myself with my business and my business issues for, 7 years before I stopped. And my business went through two massive transitions within that period. And that group are the people that really helped me through it, because it was the place where I could go and say, I've got this challenge. This is really, really difficult. I don't know how to negotiate this path. And what you get then, either from and I used a coach at the time as well, either from the coach, you'll get brilliant questions in terms of opening up your own thinking. The value of a mastermind thing will be that you'll get the out of left field questions from other people around the table based on their experience. So I'm a great fan of both. And I think, to go back to your question in terms of what people should look for, the most important thing is chemistry. It has to be someone you trust. I would also say, I mean, having myself trained in order to be a coach and had a business background, there's an element of them knowing what they're doing in terms of the coaching process and in terms of something around business. Because the purpose of a coach is not to tell you what to do, so they don't have to know your specific business, but they need to have empathy with the situation that you're in. Very early on in my kind of coaching career, a couple of bizarre things came up, and a couple of clients wanted coaching around giving up smoking. And in theory, a coach can coach on anything, because we're just asking questions, we don't have to. But I just felt because I've never smoked, I just felt no connection with the idea of how hard it must be in order to give up or whatever. And so I referred that out, because I was like, I'm not the best person to take you through that journey. I can really help you with this, but I can't help you specifically with that. So I would, if I were looking for a coach, or any listeners are looking for a coach, I'd look for chemistry. So definitely have one-to-ones. See who in your network seems to be being used by other people that you know and respect. Look for the chemistry, and then look for the level of kind of competence or experience that they've got and what they're bringing to the table. Because there are, you know, coaching has changed a lot since I started doing it over 20 years ago. There are many more people doing it than there were 20 something years ago. I mean, when I started in 2002, and I told my father I was becoming a coach, and he thought it was something to do with buses. Somebody else thought I was working in football. Whereas now I think people kind of get what business coaches do. But there are some people who have kind of, you know, stopped work 1 week doing working in the bank or something, and then the next week they're out as a business coach, and I'm not sure that they always, or they are just following a system, you know, and it's the same for everyone, whether or not that fits the individual client. And I'm less comfortable with that. It might work for them and it might work for their clients, but I'm less comfortable with that.
No, really, really good advice. And thank you for that honesty. James, I think you've widely reported yourself of one of the bad plans that you had made was planning to retire when COVID happened. How you couldn't have predicted it, I don't know. But let's, in all seriousness, let's now talk about having a plan B, if that's okay. Because I think that you are probably the biggest planner that I know, and take that as a compliment. But actually, some things just are so unpredictable, aren't they? So can you just share what the plan was before COVID and how you tweaked that plan and what from that can be, I guess, taken from the listener, whether that be from a personal life or from a business perspective?
So our plan was, so we own a motorhome. The plan was to rent our house out in Oxfordshire, live in the motorhome, travel extensively in Europe, primarily France, Spain and Portugal. And then we had three or four big bucket list kind of trips. I wanted to spend 6 months in America. My wife, Bev, wanted to spend 6 months in Australia and New Zealand. And then we had some other big trips to Latin America and stuff that were on our kind of bucket list, or mainly Bev's bucket list, but on our bucket list. And that was all going to happen within a 2 or 3 year period. And the date that we kind of set on was, as I mentioned earlier, Bev's birthday, which was mid-March, and in 2020. And so in the run-up to that, of course, preceding the pandemic, we had Brexit, which completely changed how one might be able to travel in Europe. So as opposed to having unrestricted travel, you can now only travel 90 days in a six-month period easily. So that kind of changed all that stuff. And then, obviously, the pandemic just literally, we stopped work on the, or Bev stopped work on Friday, and the lockdown was announced on the Monday. Our house was rented out, campsites were closed because of the lockdown, so we were technically homeless. We had the motorhome, but nowhere to park it. And again, we're very, very fortunate people. We have had many good friends offer us all sorts of places where we could stay, and we stayed in a friend's second home somewhere. For the first lockdown, and then managed to get back on the road in the summer. So what was the spreadsheet? And you know, we had planned to go here in France through March, April, May. We were sat in one place in Devon, and like everyone else, you know, although we thankfully weren't working, we were facing the whole thing of not being able to see our families, worrying about vulnerable members of our families who maybe needed support, all that kind of stuff. So I guess kind of you pivot. But I think the parallel with business, which I know you're keen to have, is the spreadsheet in one element was the kind of detail, this is what we're going to do every day. And that has value, or had value to us. But actually, the underlying thing is the main thing was we put ourselves in a position to be able to flex and, I hate the word, but pivot and change. And I think that's the business lesson, which is if you've got a management team or an individual who understand their business and are well-structured and it's got good systems and those kind of things, it will be able to react. So you don't necessarily need to have the plan B written if you've got the resourcefulness to react to a situation, whether that be a change in the market or an employee leaving or someone going off on maternity leave or, you know, all these kind of things that happen in life. If you've got the resourcefulness both either in yourself or within the organization, then you can react, and therefore that's where the plan so ultimately our plan was to enjoy time together, Bev and I, where we could be, you know, together more than we were when we were working, and to be traveling. And actually, even with lockdowns, we've been able to do that. So therefore, we've still fulfilled our kind of purpose and things, even if it doesn't look like that original spreadsheet, which I probably should frame somewhere as a bit of hubris as to who was I to say that I knew what was going to happen in the world.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. One of the things that I've heard several people ask you, and to be honest, I may have asked you a paraphrase myself, is have you ever been bored? Have you ever regretted it? And your answer is always no, unless it's changed throughout the last 45 minutes of doing this radio show, which is quite possible. But I think something that's very widely reported is not everybody is like you. And I think that some people, when they retire, they do find it a challenge in terms of purpose and fulfillment and happiness. So I guess what would be your advice to, and I appreciate there isn't a one size fits all in terms of ensuring that actually that retirement is right for you, but when you do retire, that you do enjoy your life and enjoy each day.
Yeah, and it's not just my story. I mean, I helped many of my clients build to the point where they exited their businesses and they retired. And this was included in their journey as well, some of the stuff that I was working with them on. I think the main thing is to have something to go to. So whether that be travel, or that be a hobby, or that be a project or a charitable thing or something, it's having something that is a towards goal rather than away from work goal. So I always said that I thought work was overrated and I was happy not to work. And I stand by that. But I was also moving towards this thing, which was more time with my wife and the ability to see new places and tick off some of these bucket list things. And that was far more compelling than being away from work, because I enjoyed my job. I enjoyed the work that I did with clients and things. And so I think that would be the thing, is to say, I've seen a few people close to me, sort of family members, where, you know, particularly men, get to 65 in the old days, you know, on the 65th birthday, they don't go to work anymore and they don't know what to do. They haven't necessarily built hobbies, they haven't necessarily built a community at home because they've been out of community at work. And so two people close to me, that was the start of their decline, sadly, because, and the stats on kind of mortality for men in the year after the retirement is quite scary. So, and I think that's part of it, which is they do lose that purpose. They do lose that definition. And so I would say plan for it, obviously, but I think it's about having something to go towards. And that definitely varies from person to person, but the principle is have something that you're moving towards. And also, I mean, we both know people who are in their late 70s or 80s who are in the Oxfordshire business community and still enjoying what they're doing. So people don't have to do what I did. I think if someone has to work because they don't want to, but they happen to work in order to feed themselves, that's sad. But if they're in a position where they're doing it because they're enjoying it, then great. If that keeps their minds active and physically active, gets them out socially. I'm not saying everybody should stop work at 35. But I think that if in any situation, it's just about doing what you're enjoying and trying to design your life to be that thing which is, this is what makes me happy, because I believe we only get one shot at this. It's not a dress rehearsal, so we should do what we want to do with it.
Amazing. James, we are very almost coming to the end of the show. I can't believe it's almost been an hour already. But one of the things that I really like to do with guests, and this week is going to be no different, is share it like a takeaway tip or a message for the listener. So, which seems a bit weird because you've been giving tips for the last hour. But if you were to give one consideration or one tip for those listening at home or in their car or at work, what would be, I guess, your takeaway tip?
It's definitely spend less than you earn and invest the rest. And start as early as possible. And there may be some listeners who are closer to retirement and therefore this is a thing that is less relevant to them because they're already on a path, but they probably have kids who could do with hearing the message. So definitely anyone who's got youngsters in their 20s or 30s who think that retirement's a long way away, get them to spend less than they earn and invest the rest, and let the power of compounding deliver them something, even if it's not the big number, it'll be a contribution towards them being able to have a more comfortable later life.
What great advice and what a way to end the show. So thank you so much, James, for joining me on the radio today. I genuinely can speak for anyone listening to this show that actually you've shared a nugget, and I'm certain of that. So thank you so much. So next week, we are going to be back with three brand new guests, and we're going to be talking about property in Oxfordshire. So to do that, we're going to be joined by Vinny Kumar of Cherry Picked Residential, Ruben Diffy of Property Formula, and Greg Thompson of Oxford Property Consulting Limited. And just final reminder that you can listen to this show every Sunday at 11 o'clock on the radio or online. There is also a podcast version, which is available via all your favourite podcast platforms, and is released on the Monday morning. And if you can bear looking at a video of me and my wonderful guests, do look out for the video format, which is on the Get Radio Facebook page and their website every Tuesday. But until then, enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to seeing you next week. Thank you so much.